You know, when Vusimusi contacted me, to you, you still call him Trevor, but we've migrated. I wanted to impact you, and I was not sure how I was going to do that. So I felt that the introduction would lead to a Q&A where we can engage with one another. So there were a few points that I wanted to touch on. The first was a very short view of my history, and then the rest is about my future. Before I start, I actually want to acknowledge two people who were, in the course of their daily work, were doing a job. But in the context of my past, were very seminal in the delivery of what becomes Masawara today. The first was Mkomo Wangu Vingirai Samaita. Without him, yes. Without him, I may not have been able to take over TA, but his belief in me gave me some of the capital that I needed to do that. And I'll always acknowledge it because it's important. As we just heard, the balance sheet is about people. And this is a big part of my balance sheet. The next one is Muranganwa, Mr. Chanakira. Again, one of the big elements in my journey was to take over an asset in Botswana. And without his bank and his support, I would not have been able to do it. And I'm hoping you begin to understand what relationships mean. Unfortunately, both of these financial institutions were disrupted, and it has caused a whole generation to operate with inadequate financial support. And until we rebuild that capacity, it will be tough for our young entrepreneurs to truly deliver what they need to deliver. So some of us must begin to think about how do we strengthen the financial delivery. Because without our ability to put capital in the hands of the entrepreneur, he is limited to his growth capacity. In terms of my past, there are just two elements that I want to highlight. One is vision. I don't think you can succeed fully without a compelling vision of what you want to achieve. Vision is what pulls you through the most difficult parts of your journey. And therefore, if you don't have that vision, I would suggest you put energy into developing a strong vision for yourself. The second part that I wanted to touch on my past is I have made many mistakes. I no longer call failures failures because in my world, a failure is an opportunity to assess and to correct. I feel you only fail if you don't learn a lesson from the event. So businessmen, businesswomen, you will, I can trust, I can bet you, make mistakes. You will encounter what are perceived to be failures. The challenge for you is how do you learn from those mistakes. And that lesson is a value add. I could tell you about the journey, but those are probably the two most critical elements that I want you to take away from it. If the journey is so compelling for you, when we have a Q&A, you can ask a particular question that you want. I don't have much time, so I want to focus on a couple of other things that are very seminal to me. And part of what Paul, the ambassador, spoke about resonated for me, and I'll bring it up just now. We, as Zimbabweans, as Africans, as members of SADC, have a challenge. And the challenge we have is before we understand whom we are, we're going to not win the war that confronts us. We have had 200 years of continual indoctrination, which has forced us to abandon our identity, not to be proud of our identity. And I'll take the speech by the ambassador. Some of you may not have noticed because it was so natural, but at no point in his speech did he bring up anyone but a French citizen who was proud of his people. And he communicated in every example his people. I love that. He didn't bring an American, a Japanese, a German, not even a Zimbabwean. Identity. Until we begin to own our identity, we as a people have a problem. Now, identity comes in two forms that are critical. Self and nationhood. Of late, I've become very spiritual. And in being spiritual, something dawned on me. The missionaries came to our beautiful country and they helped us discover God in the form of Jesus. Beautiful. But they were naughty. Because they told us that we must carry Christian names. Is that not the case? Eventually they were so tired, they just said, as long as it's English, it's okay. Christian, English is the same thing. Are you with me? So one day, I asked a very learned friend, in the Bible, when Jesus was wandering around that sub-region called the Middle East and parts of Northern Africa, was there any point that Jesus said to somebody, I don't like your name. Can you change it to a Hebrew name? And I discovered there was not once, ever, that he did that. In fact, I learned that in the Bible, God only changed the name twice. Abraham and Paul. It's the only time that these incredible figures change somebody's name. Yet we have missionaries who spent the last 100 years telling us ours were inadequate. And I realized why. Because their job was to colonize our minds. Are you with me?
Yeah.
It is so important. Their job was to colonize our minds and to build us to believe we were inadequate. Unfortunately, if you are going to compete in this world and you do not believe you are adequate, you are going to lose. You are going to lose. So I want you, if there is anything that you take away from me today, is the concept of identity. Now, yesterday, day before yesterday, I was fortunate to be at what was called a wellness gathering. What I learned from there was something, again, I want you to really appreciate. And that is the power of data. At this point in time, if you take a look at a map of the world, there's a lot of light everywhere, except on our continent. We are the only continent that does not appreciate the value of data. Unfortunately, the rest of the world is beginning to realize that, you know, in Europe, in America, there are a lot of people of African descent. And we have to get some data on how the physiology of Africans operates. So they are going to begin to start coming onto this continent to get free data and make a lot of money from that data. Again, what I would say to you, young businessmen, businesswomen, is if you have the ability to collect data, collect it. And don't give it away, because it is valuable. We have to begin to own our assets. There was a posting that was on the In Conversation platform where Mkomo Wangu Vingirai talked about why are we wasting time on AI when we cannot even repair our roads? You know, one of our problems is we collectively given away our power to the political class. So we actually expect people who are less competent than we are to drive our future. There's something wrong with us, not with them. There are so many things that we should be able to do. Now, let me be very clear, because I might be quoted out of context. I'm not a politician. I have no desire to be a politician. But I'm a leader. And I'm part leader of this region. And I want to participate in the leadership of the future of this region. I chose to do it through business. And I want to stay relevant in business. But we have to begin to appreciate that we are participant in the evolution of our country. And if the roads have potholes, let's stop looking at somebody else and let's start saying, what can we do? Simple, what can we do? And that begins, we begin to empower ourselves to be participant in the development of this great region. The last thing I want to just say, you know, I know we're passionate about our country, Zimbabwe. Inini ndinozi mambo mtasa. My kingdom is part in Mozambique and part in Zimbabwe. So sometimes I say to myself, who am I? And the better definition of who am I is that I'm a member of the SADC region. The moment we, as young entrepreneurs, begin to see the opportunity as a SADC opportunity, rather than a Zimbabwean opportunity, it changes. First of all, our scope, our capacity to think changes. So everything else was not worthy of a clap. The moment we begin to look at ourselves as players in SADC, our ability to become competitive changes. Now, no disrespect to my friend, the French ambassador, and I have to say he's one of the best ambassadors I've had, I felt. I do. One of the things that we must understand, we are where we are today. You know, in 1834-35, cousins who ran Europe decided we shouldn't fight about this wonderful asset that we now control called Africa. So let's cut it up in pieces. Today, what they cut up, how they cut up, is still how we function. And I hate the fact that I embrace what they did 150 years ago, if not more. We have to think beyond what was. And our future is dependent on how we revisit this region of ours. As the ambassador said, they want us to be a partner. Unfortunately, we are not yet ready in our minds to be partners. We still like the idea of being given freebies. The moment we start acting out as true partners, I think our world will transform. The world will transform. So, I don't want to waste too much energy giving you what I was thinking. I want us to have a Q&A so that we engage one another. I just wanted to highlight those two, three or four very, very important elements to my world. Mindset. Our mindset has to change. Our mindset has to change. We have to begin to build structures that make us love ourselves. You have to understand, 150 years of telling you that you are not worthy, that your names are actually not good enough.
Thought-provoking. I was with somebody for breakfast on Monday, and he sits with me and he starts talking. He says, there's only two people who make me do what you do. It's you and Shingai. You just look at me, you ask me one question, and I just start talking and talking. But I say the thing with Shingai is, you know, when you spend quality time with somebody and you walk away, you feel, wow, That was beautiful. Wasn't that not beautiful? I see Dr. Wazara has his hand up. Is your hand up, Dr. Wazara? Okay, right. I know Shingai very well, but I know you guys don't. So I'm going to give you an opportunity to download as much as possible. So please let's engage with Shingai. Shingai is an asset for us. It's a privilege that we are sitting in the same room with Shingai. Mambo Mutasa. So somebody challenged me right now to say, Trevor, if you don't speak in Ndebele before we leave, I'm not coming back. So mina igama lami ngu Trevor Ncube. Ngazalwa koBulawayo, ngafunda eMzilikazi High School. Ngaqala eMagwekwe, grade 1 to grade 7. Ngasensiya eMzilikazi, ngafunda form 1 up to form 6 eMzilikazi High School. Ngithe ngiqeda eMzilikazi High School, lapho ngaqeda senguhead boy khona. I was the head boy eMzilikazi High School. Ngasensiya University of Zimbabwe. University of Zimbabwe, ngabala ngenza i-degree ye-economic history. Ngathola i-first class. Ngilitshelile izolo ukuthi ukubala ngikwazi, ngili-dyslexic, into ezinjalo. But ngathola i-first class ku-economic history. Ngase ngiqala ukwenza i-DPhil, MPhil. Ngathola i-scholarship, ngathola indawo e-University of Calgary ukuthi ngiyekwenza i-doctorate. Ngasengiswela imali yokubhadala iflama china ukuthi ngiyobala i-degree yami Calgary. Yikho-ke nje ngihlezi phambi kwenu namhlanje. Ngabe ngile doctorate ngaba ngikho la. I hope that made you. Somebody happy out there. Dr. Zoe, Dr. Wazara.
Thank you very much, Mkoma Shinga. You missed part of the presentations before about filling the gap of data and filling the gap of representation of our region. And so I'm glad you mentioned it without having been a part of that, just to emphasize how important it is.
Yes.
I want to make a...
Is Chido here?
Yeah, she was one of them.
Okay, is she here? She left this morning. Okay.
So I want to mention something, and then I'm going to put you on the spot. My medical profession, the last real data that was focused on a Zimbabwean African was in the days of Professor Michael Gelfand. And he has a book called The African Patient. And he was trying to share that the physiology was not the same as what was in the mainstream books.
Yes.
And then having worked in Chiredzi for so many years, I found that the people in Chiredzi, the indigenous people of Chiredzi, hardly end up in ICU. For similar conditions that people up here and people from the West, for sure. Honestly, we had conditions that you know that if you see this condition, this person is going to ICU. But the people in Chiredzi, they treat them and they don't end up in ICU. Their physiology was different. The women in Chikombezi go to the bush to deliver babies by themselves and have a comparable mortality rate to people that deliver in hospitals. And there's something there. So for sure, that data needs to be collected correctly, and that data needs to be published. But I want to ask three questions to you, because your looks are very deceptive. You have looked like this to me for the last 30 years. So I want you to tell us how old you are, number one. What tools can we deploy to make sure that people embrace their identity? I know that in Israel they have every Friday they have some kind of teaching on who they are as a people. I know that there are other countries that do the same. Mm. And we have children that are born here, bred here, that can't speak their language here. Yeah. And so how old are you? When did this thing start burning as hot as it is burning in you now? Yeah. And what tools should be deployed to get this identity thing reorganized?
Thank you, Dr. Wazara.
Thanks. Thank you, Matthew. I've tried to get his... Chamnora. You know, the first one's easy. I'm 67 this month. So that's good. The second one that I want to touch on is how do we reignite our sense of self? And I'm paraphrasing. You know, the people I look to talk to the most today are pastors. Because they're the only people that my society goes to willingly without being forced. And therefore, they're the only people that our people listen to for advice. The more the pastor can redirect us to think about our identity, the faster it will become for us to re-embrace ourselves. So the pastor is such a critical person. The second is how we educate ourselves. I go back to the ambassador. Every single time he spoke, it was of a French. And I'm proud of it. If I was French, I'd be very proud. When I look at Muranganwa and his education training modules, one of the things that I would love for him to become is the authority in training and education. But he does it making sure that the tools that are used are ones that are going to glorify Trevor when it comes to communications, that are going to glorify Dangote when it comes to incredible vision and enterprise, as opposed to somebody from America or somebody from France. Because until we embrace ourselves in action, we can't win, because always we're going to think of somebody, whether they are Chinese, Indian, European, American, as the platform. In terms of when did this...
The itch.
Itch. You know, it's evolutionary. You discover as you go along that something is wrong. Something is not right. Mkwasha wangu, Mkwamba wangu, Nkosana, used to say, I think Africans are stupid. And I would fight with him. I'm getting close to believing.
Oh, please don't.
No, I won't. So as time has gone on, and I question, and I look at the fact that we are still comfortable as a society to export our raw materials and buy the finished product, I keep on questioning why. Why are we that comfortable? Last year, I was invited to Mwenezi to see the steelworks that were going on. And I'm just giving this as an example. And when I started asking the Chinese guy, and you have to be so, so impressed with them. He says, Shingai, you know, I don't understand why you guys are so infatuated with Zisco, which has not operated for 30 years. Yet you sit on one of the largest iron ore belts in the world. 200 kilometers away, you have more coking coal than you'll ever need as a people. And the whole country is made up of limestone. What we're doing here, because of that, because in China, for the same product, it takes us 7,000 kilometers to move one product, 4,000 kilometers to move another one, 5,000 kilometers to move another one, and then we manufacture steel. Here, a maximum of 200 kilometers, I've done the whole thing. I'm going to be the cheapest cost producer of steel in the world. Not in Africa, in the world. But it's been sitting there for you. Did you do chemistry, Shingai? So I said, yes. So did you not know that these things are here? So for me, I think it's been an evolutionary process. But once I became clear that our identity is an impediment if we don't embrace it, to success. Now, it's okay when I'm competing against you, Matthew, because I'm competing with the same mindset. But the moment Mr. French comes along and competes with us, we're at a disadvantage. And we're at that disadvantage because of what has been happening over the last 150 years. Now, I want us to create out of our next generation of entrepreneurs, globally competitive entrepreneurs. And to be global, we've got to be proud of who we are. In fact, we have to be arrogant about who we are. The last point, because it's just come, you know, God was wonderful. He says, I made you in my own image. Mm. That's what he said. Unfortunately, we don't think this is the image of God.
Wow.
Unfortunately.
Wow.
So when you fight against people who believe they're the image of God, and you think they're the image of God, you have a problem. You're not going to win. Are you with me?
Yeah.
I hope I've answered your questions.
Yeah. Wow. That bites, eh? That goes right into... any other questions? I really do. There's a question at the end there, right at the back. Anybody close to... And the question close to you, Dara. Yes, sir. Identify yourself and let's go.
Yes, sir. My name is Tinashe Vingirai. Thank you very much, sir, for the talk. I just have a question on vision. I wanted to ask, how do you balance staying true to your vision with adapting to changing markets?
You know, when I was 30, my father helped me out at a very critical point in my development. Up until then, my vision was to make a lot of money. And I'd failed to make a lot of money. So I felt like I was a failure. And my father was able to redefine how I look at vision. So I then repositioned my vision. My overall vision was, I want to make a difference to my society. That's the vision. I want to make a difference to my society. And he made me understand that there were really three ways that you can make a difference. Business, politics, and the church. And I suppose the church is social, but at that time, those were the three ways I could make a difference. Now, at that time, my relationship with God was not great, so we put that one aside, the church. Politics is probably the most immediate of the three if you get elected. And because of my name, especially in this part of the world, my chance of becoming a political actor was high. But I said to my father, you know, if I go into politics, I'm going to be corrupt because I like good things and I don't have any money. So let's put that aside as well. So we chose business. And so you can imagine how deliberate that process was. Mm. We chose business. What he said to me was, you know, to make a difference in business takes a long time. Because your name is the only asset you really have in business.
Yeah.
So it takes a long time. So I accepted that there was longevity in this journey. When I look at the last 35, 36 years in that journey, I've come up against incredible obstacles. When you can imagine wanting to build the Joiner City, and you start at an exchange rate of 8 to 1, and when it finished, it was a multiple of zeros on top of the quadrillions in terms of the range. So you can imagine the amount of obstacles that were thrown in our way. What drove me, though, was the clarity of the vision. It allowed me to continually go through obstacles because I had a very strong belief of where I was going. Mm-hmm. Now, you will find in any business and any, from Trevor to Matthew, you will find that you get into challenges. What has pulled me through all of those is a strong sense of where I'm going, that vision. I hope I'm answering your question.
I want you to be as vulnerable as possible. Mm. What's the biggest mistake that you've made in business? One that has really humbled you, and how were you able to get over that? Because you stand here as my pastor, Matthew Waza, I said, you give us, you're shining and you're well and...
This is my wife.
This is your wife. And it's like nothing ever happens wrong with you. Mm. So I really want you to be vulnerable to help these people understand that the Joiner Center, Joiner City journey was tough. You've shared with me that journey, you know, Nick Vingerai helping you structure the TA deal. Mm. But I want you to share with us so that we confirm as we leave Nyanga that you're human after all. What's the biggest mistake that you've made, and what lessons did you learn from that?
I think I've made so many mistakes, honestly. And to say one, in 2010, when I launched Masawara, I was approached by a friend and said, you know, Shingai, you used to be in oil. There's this opportunity to take over BP Shell. Why don't you go for it? And I said, why not? Why not?
Why not?
It was not part of my strategy. But something grabbed me, which is called testosterone. You know testosterone? Mm. It grabbed me. And I thought, why not? And over the course of a year, they started with 52 companies, and we ended up winning the rights to take over BP Shell. And what was interesting, a lot of lessons were learned from that. What was interesting is the price ranged from 52 million to my price of 34 million. In between there, there were four other prices. And I remember sitting with the French director of Shell at the time. He says, I now know the prices. How come you've given me the opportunity to buy? Mm. Says, you know, Mr. Mtase, it's very simple. In our world, the price doesn't matter. You can imagine we're a $100 billion company. 52 million is not going to make a difference to us. So what matters to us is the cost of making a mistake. Mm. When we analyzed all the five finalists, yours was the one where we could be confident we are not making a mistake. Hmm. One, we know where you raised your money, so it's clean. Two, we see that in due diligence you're not politically aligned. And on those two bases, we're very comfortable to take 34 instead of 52. So wow. That's the first thing. I got excited and I won, blah, blah. But you know, from the day I acquired that asset, it was painful to me. Painful. Literally, we then started to say, how do we exit this thing? Mm-hmm. 3 years later, we exited. We exited well. It was not a negative exit. But it was a mistake for me because, firstly, I was driven by the wrong sentiment. I was driven
motive.
I was driven by arrogance, by wanting to show how big and it was the wrong thing.
Yeah.
It led to a really massive mistake. But when I look at business, to be honest with you, the number of mistakes that I've made, I should write a book which says Shingai Mtase's mistakes, and there are many. What I've learned from it is that I must, as often as possible, be driven by what I am good at. That becomes the center point of everything else. And I'm not good at many things, so the problem is then wanting to do things because I've been told about them or I've done this. So that's where most of the mistakes comes from. Mm.
The Joiner Center journey was long, arduous, painful. Mm. You've spoken about the vision thing. But there must have been moments where you say to yourself, this is a big mistake. You must have had moments when you were low. Yeah. You must have had moments when you wanted to give up.
Yeah.
And I think for the young people out there, you know, when we drive around town and we're looking at that Joiner Center when it was just concrete and stuff, but And what about you driving through that for five? How many years does it eventually take?
It took 13 years.
13 years.
It's embarrassing.
Oh, wow.
It's embarrassing.
13 years of looking at that.
Yeah.
It's not embarrassing. There's a lot of factors there. Talk to us about the moments. Were there those moments when you felt, no, big mistake, let me walk away, I failed, and so forth? The low moments, what was it like?
Yeah. You know, the joiner from when I started to when I finished, you know, Matthew, you talk about that journey. I think that was a big part of the transition. First, it was only afterwards that I realized that it was not me. This was God. Because when I look at what capacity I had when I started, I had no capacity to build the Joiner City. None. It's different from, say, Wavingirai, when he decided to set up the bank, he already had a very clear understanding of the process of banking. In fact, he could do the telling and all the way to the top. I had no capacity to lay a brick, to do architecture, to do anything. The only thing I had was this burning vision to build it. And I remember it was with Vernon, those of you who may remember, Mamuka. When we were looking at buildings in New York, and we remarked, that in 1892, there was a war between Wamanyika and Wamaungwe, and obviously we won. But at the end of that process in 1892, we were now talking in 1992, 100 years later, I said, you know, Vernon, there is nothing in Zimbabwe which says in 1892 these people existed, except ourselves. Yet when I look at New York, you can see that there were men and women in 1888, 1892, just by the buildings that they have. I don't want in 2092 our children, our future, to say we didn't exist. Let's build something. So, you know, Vernon was wonderful. You know, he didn't laugh at me. He says, yeah, Shumba, that's a good idea. And that began the genesis of the Joiners City. Now, it took us from 92 to 97 to raise the money. And then it took us from 97 to 2010 to finish the building. We ran out of money four times where we did not have any money to go forward. Because you can imagine, managing exchange rates at the time was crazy. We ran out of money four times.
I want to repeat that. For those out there, you ran out of money four times.
Yes.
You continued going.
Yes. I think as I said to young Vingirai, the vision. You know, if I'm to be asked what did I contribute to the Joiner City, I think it was an unshakable belief in the vision of the Joiner City. Unshakable. Which meant that we overcame unbearable challenges to build it. But we ran out of money. And it's only at the end, I want to keep emphasizing, I really began to understand about God. I was a vehicle that he used. And there's a guy who made me understand that even more, Guti. Amazing man.
Baba Guti.
He made me understand that sometimes we are entrusted with a responsibility. We think it's us, but we're entrusted with that responsibility.
Wow. Isn't that amazing? If you didn't get anything there, then I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to take one last question. That, you know, can you see, have you seen what you've done? People have just gone zee.
But I worry. Maybe they're bored.
No, it's serious contemplation. Ethel has got the mic. Oh, sorry, I started. Nick Vingirai, my prophet. No, hold on, prophet. Let's give the young man. She's got the mic already. We'll come to you, prophet. Don't lose the mic. Yes, young lady.
Good morning.
That's the lady who gave us Starlink, by the way.
Good morning. Thank you so much. My name is Panache Mare, and I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you for for that insightful download and challenging me to actually think about my identity beyond what we, you know, grew up learning and understanding. Your name is beyond what you think it is. Yeah. It's your identity. So my question here is, which practical strategies can we implement as entrepreneurs to advance initiatives that catalyze sustainable development in Zimbabwe and position our nation as a model for Africa's economic renewal?
Oof. I'm a diplomat. Can you repeat the question again?
Sorry, it's a bit of a mouthful. Okay. Which practical strategies can we implement as entrepreneurs to advance initiatives to catalyze sustainable development in Zimbabwe and to position our nation as a model for Africa's economic renewal?
Which strategies? Wow. You know, first of all, it depends on what business sector you are in. Second, I think it's your ability to think beyond, unfortunately, beyond Zimbabwe. When I look at politically, Zimbabwe politically, one of the things that has become very clear is Zimbabwe punches way above its weight class as a country on this continent, which tells me that our political leaders, historic or present, I won't go into that, had a sense of belief about what they were doing. That's why at the height of Mugabe's tenure, Zimbabwe was Africa. It was one of the key bastions of the story of Africa. It's the same, I think, for me with our young entrepreneurs. They have to begin to have this sense of belief to go beyond the borders of Zimbabwe. I think as long as you truly fashion your business on a Zimbabwe model, I just think it's going to be limited. So that's the first aspect of it, the scalability of what you want to achieve. You know, you use the word sustainable. I'm one of those who worry about sustainability in the context of COPE, where we're told, let's remove some of the elements of how the rest of the world built their sustainability models, and we must now embrace these new models. When it is very clear, we have such significant capacity. If I take a look at energy, without energy, we can't do anything. Look at what happens to our lights. Yet we're now being told, let's not use our coal because maybe it is no longer sustainable. I worry about how we interpret the word sustainability because I think we should be using our coal. It's the cheapest way we can get energy. It's the most efficient way to get base loads. And I believe we should. So sustainability as a statement, I think I would have to say, how do we define sustainability for us? I'm hoping I'm touching on elements of your question.
Thank you. Nick Vingirai, you had a question. There's two questions. I know we're running out of time, Munich. Elif Gulandebele and... my brother at the end there. Oh, sorry, Ethel. Sorry, my apologies. Nick, go ahead. So those three we will take. Nick, please go ahead.
Thanks, Reva. No. Vusimus.
Yes, indeed.
Thanks. Well, Samaita, thank you. You know, Ruzirwedu, Tuanzo, ratidza kuti tiso ana mama vana mambo bade. Thank you very much. I think to the young men and women aspiring to be in business, you must also be prepared to be arrested here and there. You see, Samaita and myself, I think there was a time when we were arrested with a week apart when he came. I'm sorry, Samaita, I'm talking about this. When he came out, I went to see him. He had done nothing. But sometimes when you are an entrepreneur, you attract a lot of attention. it's all part of growing up.
Mm.
The reason I'm saying this is the Joiner story. When I was arrested and I came out, and I was arrested for nothing, I didn't mind. Samtasa came to pick me up, and he took me for a walk. I think I was just a day out of detention. And he came and he said, Nkoma, let's go for a walk. And he took me to Joiner Center. Joiner Center was just concrete at the time. It was going up. And he walked me from the ground up, and he was talking and explaining where things were. It was only later that I realized that he was trying to, which he did manage, to clear my mind of what I had gone through. But the challenges of a business person, they can come from different dimensions, some of which you don't even think of. He hasn't quite said his travels, his travails, and they were mega and major. So success is not cheap. And I just wanted to say this to the young man. He speaks of God. Believe you me, I dwell in that realm. And for the sake of the young, the very scripture actually says, the righteous man can fall 7 times, but he will surely rise. So you have to remain truthful to your vision. You remain focused. And you may fall 7 times, but you will surely rise. Thank you.
Amen. 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 Thank you for raising that arrest. I have the picture in my mind of the newspapers. You looking very humble with the police around you. Any thoughts on that incident?
You know what that incident taught me? It taught me what I believe is a very important word in our vocabulary, which is permanence. Permanence. You know, in the books that you all read, you're taught about short-term, medium-term, and long-term. And we behave with those mentalities. But there's something called permanence, which they don't teach you. Permanence makes you make decisions that are different from somebody who makes short-term, medium-term decisions. So I make permanent decisions because 200 years from now, I'm going to be here on this continent. And the more you begin to think permanently, for me, the stronger you become. So that lesson, actually, because I had the choice of escaping, because I was alerted to Kudi, I'm going to be arrested. That night, I was with my big brother, and we called our lawyer, Manikai.
Edwin.
And he was very stark. He says, you know, Shumba, you've got a choice. I don't recommend you run away, but that's a choice. The alternative is we go to the police station in the morning and we say we're here looking for you. So you can imagine that night, it was a tough night because the choice was very stark because I didn't know how long I would stay inside. So we chose to go in the morning to the police station, and that was the picture that they took. And it was so funny Because you go into this police station and say, guys, I hear you're looking for me. Ah, they laughed. They laughed. Said, are you Mtasawia? They locked us up. And you know when you think, but I've done nothing wrong.
Mm.
But they lock you up.
Mm.
And I've come, so there's no need for you to lock me up because I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to be here. It says, no, you have to lock you up. So it was, first of all, it was a tough experience.
Mm.
But it was an experience that, for me, toughened me up in terms of my resolve.
Mm. Ethel, you have a question?
Sure, thank you so much. Thank you, Shingai. You know, you are an inspiration to us.
Thank you.
And I liked when you gave the examples of people who had changed names in the Bible.
Mm.
Please, when you say that again, include Sarai. She was then renamed Sarah.
Okay.
For the sake of us.
I'll remember. So there are three.
Mm.
There are many more. Okay. Many more. Mm. who were changed. Mm. But at least Sarai, to include our gender on that list. And yes, the other ones, I really concur with you, like the Hebrew boys, even Joseph was then had to be given an Egyptian name for that colonization issues. And I really felt included when you were talking in your speech because you'd intentionally say businessman, businesswoman. Thank you so much for that. Mm. It's inspiring to hear people like you believing in that businesswoman.
Mm.
And for your own information, yesterday our ED events director warned Trevor not to ask many questions to the people you'll be sitting with there because those questions, they should come from us. Thank you, Trevor, for asking one of the questions that I'd written here of the mistakes that he regrets today and what he did. But my other question, Shingai, I'm also a person who is taking my business beyond the borders of Zimbabwe. How would you define legacy beyond financial success for you? And also, you know, we see amazing things that you have done. As a young people that are growing into business, there's that itch always for me and my name to be always on the walls of that business. How do you detach and let the business be and believe in other young people to be able to take it to the next generation?
Thanks, Ethel. Thank you.
I think for me, how I would love my legacy to be written will be 100 years from now, we as Africans are part of the table that runs this world of ours. And the things that we're doing now, that I'll be doing for the rest of my life, will make that happen. That for me, honestly, is what consumes me every day. How do I get into the minds of your generation and the generations below to make them believe that we can sit on that table? And that's why identity is so important. That's why shifting our mindset to believing is so important. So that's for me the legacy that I would love to leave. You know, money is a tool. It's a lovely tool, don't get me wrong. But at the end of the day, it's a tool. And if you don't know how to use it, it's a wasted tool.
Mm.
So from my perspective, I don't hunger for the legacy Yashingai Mtasa to be defined in money terms. I want it to be defined in, he actually made a difference to his society.
Mm. Mm. Wonderful. Last question.
Sure. I'm Tendai, and I'll just make the questions very short. The first one is, how has God shaped, through the business, made you a phenomenal person? How has God, your relationship with God, worked in the business? Secondly, have you seen any direct benefits for giving back in the kingdom territory that has helped in the business? And thirdly, and lastly, is through over the years, with all the policy inconsistency, how have you mitigated the challenges?
Thank you. Thank you. The first one is God. Can you repeat the first one on God?
The first one is your relationship with God and how you believe your faith with God has helped the business.
Yeah. Thank you. That one has been the most exciting of the journeys that I've evolved into. For a very long time, I didn't feel connected to God, but it's very clear he was there or she was there. In that, I did things seemingly thinking it was my brilliance, but realizing that no, this was God, and Joiner City is always going to be one of those senses of somebody else was doing it and I was just a vehicle. Over the last 5 years in particular, after meeting Baba Guti, my focus and relationship with God has become a lot more intense. But I want to be vulnerable, is that the word?
Sure, absolutely.
I want to be vulnerable. I'm not a Christian. I believe in God. I believe God came onto this earth as Jesus. And I believe in the resurrection, because when God decides to die or not to die, you know, he has that capacity. So I'm completely at one with that. But I state I'm not a Christian, because Christian is a movement of people. And unfortunately, it's a movement of people who have not been good to us. And I battle with being that. But in many ways, if you and I sat down over a cup of tea, we would have absolutely the same reverence and same love and same commitment. Secondly, what Christianity for me has robbed us of is the desire to know ourselves. I know more about a bunch of Jewish people than my neighbors in Zambia, where there's a big kingdom in Zambia, but we don't know about ourselves. And I think it's been deliberate. So anything that robs me of something that exalts me to be that image of God, I battle with. What was the last question you asked?
The last question was, with all the policy inconsistency over the years, how do you manage to mitigate and be successful?
It's been tough. you know, when your value is robbed, not because of what you have done, but because of policy, not once, not twice, not three times, four times, it has meant that permanent statement is tested aggressively. But I also believe that if my measurement of value is money, I would also battle. Because there have been so many times when you wake up one morning and your value has been degraded by 60% because of an act. But you have the same people working with you. You're producing the same goods with those people. You begin to question this matrix of value. So I try to distance myself, especially in this environment, to economic measurements. I focus more on what are we doing? Are we doing it well? How are we developing our people? And if I get that right, I know we'll overcome that part of the journey.
Wonderful. The really last question from Mr. Elif Gulandebele. Yeah, your answer. Yeah.
Thank you, leadership. Perhaps I must take your seat now, because what I do have is a remark, really, and maybe a question later.
Do it quickly. But, I can see people are shifting their seats.
I just wanted to recognize, I think, like you mentioned earlier, about your network being your net worth. Mm. And having been here for the last couple of days, I do notice that everyone who's come up here has got an anecdote or a story or a relational aspect with someone who's in the audience. Mm. Nigel came up and he spoke about Dr. Vingrai. Mr. Nyambira himself came up and he spoke about him as well. Now Mr. Mtase is here. Shumbu Aripawarukuta Oroni Zawo. So I think for me, it's been a lesson as a young person, and I use young relatively, but it's been a lesson as a young person, as a young entrepreneur, in collaboration and working together, because this is a crop of entrepreneurs that precede us, and we're looking to these people as our role models and our idols, and there's a lesson there in the fact that they all worked together. They all managed to collaborate and help each other out. So I think for the young people in the room who are aspiring entrepreneurs, I think this is a call to action.
Absolutely.
And we're being taught how to do it. So other than just hearing the stories, I'd encourage all of us to come out of here with the spirit of collaboration and working together. Now, my question, which I'll do very quickly as well. If you remember, the gentleman from Brand Africa was talking about Ubuntu, and I raised the question of, you know, scalability of African businesses and whether you can sell Ubuntu on the continent and how that is profitable. And I'm glad Shumba spoke about it, because it also resonates with what I was trying to say, that with Ubuntu, you're saying the best way to be selfish is to take care of those around you, right? And how we can scale Zimbabwean businesses is to think outside of the confines of the borders that were created in 1884 by the Berlin Conference. But how do we get young people to understand that? How do we get young people to say, businesses in Zimbabwe, think of the problem, not as a Zimbabwean problem, but think of it as a continental problem. So how do we get that mindset?
Thanks, leadership. Thank you.
I think it's some of these things are driven by example. Some of our young people have to see it happen. Now, in fact, there are quite a few young Zimbabwean entrepreneurs who have migrated out of Zimbabwe into the region. Maybe what we have to start doing is figuring out how to communicate this to others so that they know it's possible. Yeah. It was easy in the late 90s, early 2000s, when our banking companies were moving out in a massive way. That stopped, unfortunately. But they are there. And I think by example, we should illuminate those examples as much as possible. And again, this thing of lack of self-belief is one that we have to overcome, and that's why identity becomes important.
Good people, please join me. I mean, this man didn't need to be here, but he felt the need to get up this morning early with his son and drive here. Shingai, we are so grateful. You've shared amazing nuggets. There's still more for us to download from your journey. So we're really grateful. Good people, if you don't mind, join me in giving Shingai.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Shingai. Thank you, my brother. Thank you. Thank you, my loyal subject. Thank you.
Mr. President.
Thank you.